Commonwealth of Virginia. Valdale, please tell us. Mark our hearing, Attorney General, Susan Baumgartner, Assistant Attorney General, please tell us.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Melvin Hill and I represent Edward Jermaine Saunders on appeal. I also represent him in the trial court below. At the outset, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
We are here because, in our view, process used to convict Mr. Saunders violate the double jeopardy clause of the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution and also 1 Section 8 of the Virginia Constitution. And the reason we say that is this. As the court is aware, this court is aware, the case was called on April 29, 2014. The Commonwealth announced it was ready to proceed. The jury was impaneled and sworn. Evidence was taken from several witnesses. The second day of trial, the Commonwealth announced it was not ready to proceed, and it was not ready to proceed because the complaining witness in this case was not present in the courtroom, nor had responded to attempts to be contacted by the Commonwealth's attorney's office. It is our view that the inexcusable neglect of the Commonwealth in having its witness present for both days of trial, when those witnesses, the complaining witnesses, witness and her mother had been subpoenaed for both days of trial. And in support of my argument, I'd like to point out several things in the record which indicate that the Commonwealth or the exercise of reasonable care should have known that their witnesses were not coming to trial or may not come. First, page 138 of the joint appendix, question by Judge Weckstein, the assistant Commonwealth attorney. As I understand, when the attorney for the Commonwealth spoke with Rosa Day last night, who was a complaining witness's mother, she was initially reluctant to appear or have her daughter to appear, but indicated she would appear. Yes, Judge, and the response from the assistant Commonwealth attorney, Mr. Simmons, and now we have that we have not had any dealings with the complaining witness last night. It is clear that the complaining witness and her mother, or her mother and the complaining witness, however you phrase it, was not ready to come to court because they did not, in fact, appear.
Counselor, may I interrupt you for a moment?
Yes.
Jeopardy attaches in a jury trial when the jury is sworn in.
The jury panel is sworn in, yes, sir.
How many juries were sworn in this case?
I am not sure whether or not, because it was a multi-day trial, I'm not sure whether or not there were any alternates. Normally, obviously, there are 12 sworn in a criminal case.
Well, my question is, how many times was a jury, not jurors, but a jury sworn in your client's case?
Once.
So we have one jeopardy, not double jeopardy.
Well, that is the court's view. It is our view that it is double jeopardy. It is simply not a question of whether or not there were two separate juries. Clearly, there was one jury who heard the case. And if you follow, I think the Lyle case, which stands for the proposition it's the same tribunal, then it's simply not double jeopardy. But what I'm asking the court to do is to find, because the Commonwealth knew or should have known that their witness was reluctant to come to court and may not actually come to court and did not, in fact, come to court, you have to find, in our view, that that's the reason we have two separate trials. Because, again, as the court is aware, there was a delay of roughly 3 weeks while the Commonwealth court issued capias for the complaining witness and the mother. The arrest in the case was reset. Further in support of my argument,
was the Commonwealth, do I have my facts right, the Commonwealth was prepared to try the case on May 2, the day after the capias was arrested, capias was executed?
Quite frankly, I am not sure they were ready to try the case on May 2. Our problem was not ready to try the case, having a relatively busy private practice, but I am not sure whether or not at the time they were actually ready to try the case on May 2nd.
Well, did the Commonwealth attorney, the assistant Commonwealth attorney, suggest he was?
To be honest, I am not sure. I have to review the record to be absolutely sure about that.
Thank you.
Further, I would ask the court to, if at page 50 of the joint appendix, the assistant Commonwealth attorney sought from the sexual assault nurse, Ms. Davidson, what is clearly hearsay. She asked, and did you have an opportunity, this is an assistant Commonwealth attorney asking the witness, and did you have an opportunity to speak to her, referring to the complaining witness, about whether or not she had been sexually assaulted? And I objected, it's hearsay. Clearly, it's hearsay. But what I'm asking the court to do is to find out why did the assistant Commonwealth attorney ask a question which was clearly deliberately designed to elicit hearsay testimony, because they knew at that time, as our position, and a reasonable inference from that, they had trouble with the complaining witness. If the Commonwealth, if I had not objected to the hearsay, and that testimony would have come in, it would have been before the jury about the nature of the alleged sexual assault by my client. Thereby, you don't need the complaining witness at that time. And I'd ask the court to pay particular attention to the process involved in having the complaining witness here. You have, one, a complaining witness that was reluctant, and her mother, and two, you have the Commonwealth attorney deliberately trying to elicit hearsay testimony from the sexual assault nurse, the purpose of which is to, if that testimony had come in, along with, we had argued, the panties that were allegedly worn by the complaining witness at the time of the assault, because further, at page 80 of the joint appendix, you will see the Commonwealth sought to introduce physical evidence recovery kit from the victim, which included the panties she was supposedly wearing at the time of the assault. So those two pieces, if the hearsay would have been admissible and the panties would show my client some genetic material was on the panties that she was allegedly wearing at the time of the assault, then the Commonwealth didn't need the complaining witness to testify. They could have rested and probably survived the motion to strike, because you'd had the testimony of what happened, plus the physical evidence allegedly connecting my client to the assault. So as a result, we'd ask the court to find that the Commonwealth's attorney knew at the time they were trying this case, the first day of trial, that that witness was reluctant. They may not come to court. They would have survived probably a motion to strike. The case would have went to the jury without the complaining.
Counsel, let me ask you this question. Did you ask the trial judge to make such a finding?
I asked the trial judge to dismiss the case based on the double jeopardy.
Because generally appellate courts review issues of law and don't make factual findings based on the record. We can review the factual findings of the trial judge, but if he or she wasn't asked to make them and didn't make them, what is there for us to review?
Well, the court has to decide de novo whether or not the Constitution was violated. And in order to reach that conclusion, there has to be some review of the facts of the case, and it has to be some review of how we got to the point of deciding whether or not the double jeopardy clause has been violated. And again, I'd ask the court to find the review of the records, which is clear in the record. It's not necessarily a, I don't know if I would necessarily characterize it as a factual finding, because it's clear that the Commonwealth sought to introduce hearsay evidence. No, I did not at the time ask the trial judge to find, because of their attempts to introduce hearsay and their attempts to introduce the panties, therefore, the trial court ought to find that it violated the double jeopardy clause because the prosecutor did something intentional, which is to say, in our view, negligent in the sense they didn't have their witnesses there. And
what else were they supposed to do? They issued a subpoena.
Well, they were supposed to have a witness there the first day of trial, in my view. And that,
but I mean, a subpoena is an order by a court to show up at a particular time and place, and it's subject to the contempt power of the court if it's ignored. I mean, what more are they supposed to do?
Well, in this particular case, as in all cases, I would argue it's simply a requirement because, again, as I understand it, these witnesses...
Sort of a strict liability kind of thing.
Well, not necessarily a strict liability, just have the witnesses in court the first day of trial. This would, we would not be here for that one simple fact. Witnesses, you are subpoenaed, you need to be here at 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning of the trial. If you are not here, and you, then you ask the court for a continuance, and we're in a different position because jeopardy has not attached, the jury has not been impaneled.
So we need to send a squad car to all the different witnesses in a criminal case to make sure they're getting up and ready and going to escort them to court?
No, again, if you subpoena them, which is what you're required to do, and I believe we have the Commonwealth had personal service of these two witnesses, and if they are not there, the morning trial, you ask for continuous. I'm not asking the Commonwealth to do any more than it would normally do. I'm not asking the Commonwealth to do or this court to do what was required of defendants. If we don't subpoena a witness, we can't ask for a continuous. Because, again, that's, as you say, it's an order of the court requiring you to be there at that time and place. So before you step in the bench trial, before the first witness is sworn, you tell the trial judge, my witness, who I've duly subpoenaed, who has personal service, is not here. I'm therefore requesting that the matter be continued.
Okay.
Jeopardy is not attached.
I don't recall seeing the witness subpoenas. Do we know whether the child victim and her mother were subpoenaed for the first day or for the second day?
I did not find it in the opinion. I remember reading that I said it at the time. And I would like to think that I did not misrepresent anything to the trial judge, but at the time I stated in the appendix that our looking at the circuit court file, the witnesses were subpoenaed for both days of the trial. I am not sure that part made it into the appendix in the record before this court. And as I stated, I see I'm close to 5 minutes, so I'd like to reserve that time for rebuttal.
All right.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Commonwealth. This is a relatively simple case. The issue is whether there was double jeopardy, and there was no double jeopardy because the defendant wasn't twice put in jeopardy. There is a bright line rule of when you're in jeopardy and when you're not in jeopardy. This defendant was never out of jeopardy because it was the same jury reconvening. This was a continuance, which is a completely different animal.
Right. So, I mean, there conceivably could be due process or possibly speedy trial issues, but not necessarily double jeopardy problems.
There could be, and this court rejected the assignment of error that the trial court erred by permitting a continuance.
I'm not suggesting there was in this case. I'm just saying if there's a continuance and then 10 years later we proceed to trial, that would be a different matter.
Absolutely. There is case law, which I cited in my brief, of up to 42 days of a continuance being permitted, and certainly continuances in cases that are instances of Commonwealth neglect, which this case was not. This argument that has now been made that somehow the Commonwealth knew the victim was not going to appear, the only evidence of that is that the Commonwealth stated that when they spoke to the victim's mother, and remember, we have a victim here who's 13 years old. She's unable to transport herself, and she's obviously a minor child. The Commonwealth spoke to the mother the evening of the first day of trial, and she was reluctant, but said they'd be in court the next morning. That afternoon, when she hadn't been in court, the victim's father was in court, the mother's sisters, the victim's aunts were in court, and the Commonwealth had spoken to the mother's fiancé, who also said, they left today. I expected them to be in court. That's all on page 138 of the record.
Excuse me for interrupting. Is there any question that subpoenas were issued for these witnesses?
No, there were definitely subpoenas issued. That's at, I believe, page 129 of the record. And I was looking, Mr. Hill does state at one point on the record that he's confirmed in the file that they were subpoenaed for both days, but I couldn't find that right now. The subpoenas themselves were not put in the appendix.
But we know there was a capias. You don't send a capias unless you have a subpoena.
Correct. There's absolutely no question they were subpoenaed for the second day of trial, and there was a capias sent out, and in fact, both the 13-year-old victim and her mother were arrested the day after on May 1st. And in answer to your question of whether the Commonwealth was ready to proceed on May 2nd, they were, and that's at page 153 of the record.
So the truth is we're not really looking at a May 20 deadline. We're looking at a May 2 deadline in terms of the Commonwealth-caused delay, if you want to call it that.
Correct. On May 2nd, when the Commonwealth announced ready, the defense asked until May 7th to do some research on whether or not the case could continue. That was after several jury members had stated that on May 8th they would be leaving the state for some time. So with that knowledge, the defense asked for a May 7th hearing date for just legal argument, and then when all the parties could reconvene was May 20th. So the defendant is asking here to be rewarded, and one of the things he's asking to be rewarded for is something that I don't think can be ignored. The victim was secreted at his home. She spent the night of April 30th at his home. Now, her attorney proffered that she and her mother were approached by the defendant's family members. And whatever happened at that home, which was not explored on the record, but her attorney stated that she was personally afraid of the defendant for her safety. He is asking to be rewarded for that. He's asking to be rewarded for sitting silent in court when, in fact, all evidence points to the fact that he knew exactly where the victim was.
So it's a little ironic the Commonwealth is being accused of bad faith in this case.
Absolutely. And the issue of whether there was an excusable neglect really doesn't come into the bright line test of double jeopardy. It merely comes into whether there was an inexcusable neglect for continuance. And as we've seen, in the Webb and the Barrett cases, even if the Commonwealth realizes at some point that they need additional evidence, it is not necessarily improper, it's not an abuse of discretion to give them a continuance to get that. In this case, the Commonwealth simply needed a continuance of 2 days to secure a child victim who at best had a mother colluding with the defendant to keep her from the court, and at worst, the defendant was engaged in witness tampering. If there are no further questions, I urge you to affirm. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
I take issue with the characterization that somehow we were rewarding Mr. Saunders for bad behavior. If he would have engaged in witness tampering, why wasn't he charged with obstruction of justice? Any charge whatsoever, he was not in fact charged.
Was the victim witness at his home the night before?
That's what the record indicates. That's correct.
So did he know that the victim witness, the person he was accused of criminality on, was at his home?
I'm sure he did. The question then becomes, how did she get there? And that is not explored in the record.
Well, I'm quite sure the police didn't put her there.
Well, that is true, but the mother could have taken her there. And that's one reasonable inference from it. And again, I emphasize to this court, if Mr. Saunders, my client, had been involved in any illegal activity with respect to that witness being there, why wasn't he charged?
Well, it's a good question, but it's not the question we have to answer today.
But again, that impacts the court's decision because, again, if this court is concerned about, as the Assistant Attorney General mentioned, somehow rewarding Mr. Saunders, we're here to protect individuals' constitutional rights. And the issue is whether or not the procedure violated the double jeopardy clause of the Constitution, both the federal and state constitution, not whether or not Mr. Saunders was somehow engaged in witness tampering, because that question should be answered. He was not, because he is not, in fact, charged and is not before the court today. We do not know from the record how to make a date, the victim got there. We simply don't know. And again, my point is simply this. By requiring the witness to be in court the day of the first day of trial, all of this would have been unnecessary. Let's assume for the purposes of this discussion that Mr. Saunders somehow was involved in her not being in court the second day of trial. Why wasn't she there the first day? If she, again, is not there for whatever reason, whether her mother did it, somebody else did it, Mr. Saunders did it, somebody else.
So if we have excuse me for interrupting. If we have a complex, lengthy trial with many, many witnesses, if I understand the rule you're urging us to adopt, everybody would have to be there the first day to be recognized.
Yes, sir.
And if somebody's not there, then we get a continuance. That's what we have to do.
That's what I'm urging the court to do. Okay. This was not a complex trial. It was, I believe, set for originally 2 days. And it was not that much of a stretch to have the witnesses there. And maybe you're talking about a six-week trial or a three-week trial. That may be something different. And it's different when you're dealing with professional witnesses. We often do it with respect to police officers and Bureau of Forensic Science chemists because they're professional witnesses and we know they'll be there. If you say we are not needed the first day, be there the second day. That's not a problem. But here you're dealing with civilian witnesses, and at some point the Commonwealth knew that those witnesses may not, or to put you the words, Judge Wechstein asked the Commonwealth attorneys, reluctant to appear. And if those witnesses are reluctant to appear, again, it is important, once they've been subpoenaed, once they've been served, to have them there the first day of trial. Again, I want to emphasize and ask the court not to be, in my view, sidetracked with the issue of why necessarily the witness was not there, and to point to the conduct of the Commonwealth attorney. Again, it is very, very important to pay attention to what they tried to elicit from the other witnesses other than the complaining witnesses. And in my view, again, because they knew they had problems with the complaining witnesses. But for that fact, I would think my argument would not be as strong, but it's clear the Commonwealth sought to introduce hearsay, sought to introduce the panties without laying the proper foundation for the introduction because they did not have the complaining witness. Why they didn't have the complaining witness? Because they did not require them to be in court the first day of trial. And because they did not require them to be there the first day of trial, my client has suffered, in my view, a violation of the double jeopardy clause. We are not, and I emphasize, rewarding Mr. Saunders for anything. I know it's difficult to look at a case where someone's charged with sexual abuse of a child, because if this court rules in Mr. Saunders' favor, the case is dismissed because it's a violation of the double jeopardy clause. But again, I'd emphasize, we are here to protect the constitutional rights of not Mr. Saunders, but for everyone. and ask the court to find that the conduct of the Commonwealth's attorney in this case, it is not evil or evil intent, it was simply negligence in not having the complaining witness in court the first day of trial.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.